Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up on the program, we'll discuss an event from the 1972 presidential campaign when George McGovern dropped Thomas Eagleton from the Democratic ticket. Joshua Glasser, author of The 18-Day Running Mate, joins the program. Plus, we'll talk with British adventurer Dave Cornthwaite about his recently completed swim down the Missouri River. But first, it's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state political news with the Dakota Political Junkies. And joining the program today are John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader, and David Montgomery, political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, where he also writes the Political Smokeout blog. John and David, thanks for joining the program today.
Glad to be here.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, there are only a few weeks to go before Election Day. The major statewide race in South Dakota is the one between U.S. Congresswoman Kristi Noem and her Democrat challenger Matt Varelek. And I think I've been asking this question every week lately. John Hunter, is this race grabbing the attention of voters yet?
Oh, I think so. You know, in absence of a Senate race or a gubernatorial race, this is it for us. So I think, yes, they are. I think the public is engaged with this.
David, do you agree?
To a certain extent. I think people are starting to tune in, but certainly compared to other races we've had, 2010 House race, some of the big Senate races we've had, this is not even in the same ballpark. I think people are starting to tune in, but it's not dominating the public attention like some of the higher profile congressional races we've had here.
Why do you think that is?
Not as much money flowing around, not as much ads. I don't think there's the sense that it's quite so close and that quite so much depends on it. Some of the big races like 2004 and 2010 were very nationalized and were linked to people's opinions of what was going on in Washington, D.C., and the particular political leaders, presidents, leaders of the House and the Senate. And I think this is a much more localized race, and there's much less money flowing around, a lot fewer ads on TV.
You mentioned television ads. A couple of new ones came out this week. Kristi Noem has a new ad, and Matt Varelek has a new ad after, I think, being away from television for about a week or so. Let's listen to both of those, but let's start with Matt Varelek's new ad.
Noem's not doing her chores. In Noem's first year, she skipped 16 of 20 Ag Committee hearings, and the transcripts show that when she was there, she said almost nothing. In his first year, John Thune's Ag transcript filled 40 pages. Bill Janklow's? 52. And Kristi Noem's? Fits on a single page. During the worst drought in a generation, Noem's not working. Matt Varelek will.
I'm Matt Varelek, and I approve this message.
Well, John Hunter, how effective do you think that ad is?
Well, they're banking on this strategy, and it's not a bad one to bank on, I don't think. I think that, you know, it depends upon how that message gets across, but that hardworking South Dakotans would not like, if it's true, would not like a congressperson not working hard. The question is it true or not? And the Noem campaign disputes, you know, the records of missed meetings and so forth. But I think they're banking on it. And if they go strong enough, it could dent the race. That's for sure.
David Montgomery, do you think that's remains an effective criticism? And is it even a fair complaint?
Well, I think it's potentially an effective criticism. It's one of the best weapons that the Varelek campaign has, one of their best arguments that Noem isn't doing her job. Obviously, the facts are disputed by both sides, in part because Congress, for whatever reason, doesn't take attendance at these meetings. So it's very hard to get to establish things for certain. As an ad itself, I think this is moderately effective. I mean, it's the sort of thing that could persuade somebody who sees it, who's maybe on the fence one way or the other. But I don't think it's the kind of ad that goes viral, as they say, and it can get people talking and sharing it and sending it around. That's the kind of ad that someone like Matt Varelek, who's running a race with considerably less money than his opponent, needs in order to upset an incumbent like this.
With less than a month to go, is it too late to start running attack ads?
I don't know if it's too late. My sense is it would have been smarter to start running this kind of ad 3 or 4 weeks ago, but I'm not getting paid big money to run a campaign, so.
Well, what about you, John Hunter? Is it a little late for attack ads? Or?
No, I'm not a fan of them anyway, but it's certainly not too late. I think the 96 when they attacked Larry Pressler as Limousine Larry, that came on within days of the election. And so, fair or unfair, I think those can come even at the last minute.
Well, Representative Noem has a new ad, and she takes quite a bit of a lighter approach. Let's hear the audio to that television ad.
This is my granddaughter, Christy Noem.
Thanks, Grandma. You know, Medicare.
Christy wants to talk to you about Medicare.
That's right. The president's
about how Mr. Obama is robbing Medicare to pay for Obamacare. Well, $700 billion in cuts.
It's $716.
That's a big number. And what do we get? Government-run health care.
And that.
That's not change I can believe in. Did you want to say something, Christy?
I think you said it all, Grandma. I'm Christy Noem, and I approve this message.
And a cookie?
Yeah.
David Montgomery, your thoughts on that?
Well, in terms of its execution and production, I think it's a very good ad. It's funny. It's relatable. The question, of course, is how accurate it is. And I think that certainly the reality is, at the very least, considerably more complicated than that ad was on about what the changes were to Medicare in the President's Affordable Care Act, which slowed down a projected increase in spending but didn't actually reduce the overall spending for the program over the next 10 years.
John Hunter, your reaction to that spot?
Well, I think Christie's campaign is running as a challenger and not as an incumbent, and that's probably a good strategy. I mean, with public dissatisfaction of Congress, remember, she ran 2 years ago against Stephanie Herseth as Sandlin as a challenger and saying, Congress is broken, I can go there and change it. And really, that's very similar to this. It's a, this Affordable Care Act is wrong. Send me to Washington to change it or some implication of that. So I think clearly running as a challenger, and I would guess that there are races all over the country just like that where incumbents are running as though they're running for Congress for the first time.
But it almost sounds in there that she's running against President Obama rather than Matt Verilek.
Well, that's, the Affordable Care Act is up and down the Republican Party as a target and as an issue for them. And so I think it's not necessarily as a running against President Obama as a candidate, but against that particular issue and government operated health care.
David Montgomery, in looking at these two ads, do they give us any special insight into the campaigns or how things look internally to the campaigns?
I think it shows a certain confidence on the part of the Noem campaign. They have yet to mention Matt Verilek's name in any of their television ads, which suggests that they're not particularly worried about him. I think if this race gets close, you're going to see the Noem campaign launch attack ads against Verilek. But if they feel confident they've got a big lead, why bother? I mean, attack ad will only tell more people who Christy Noem's opponent is. And she's got a big lead. She'd prefer to just make sure they know about her and not about her opponent. You'll notice that, as John mentioned, she even mocked the President Obama's 2008 campaign slogan in there. While not mentioning Verilek's name, so it's almost like she's running against Obama, which is probably an effective strategy, especially if she's up in the polls.
I don't know if this means anything, but I think both these ads came out on the same day or close to the same day. The YouTube views for Christy Noem's ad, about 2,500, and Matt Verilek only about 471. Can we take anything from that?
Just a little bit, I guess. I think... I mean, the Noem campaign has a much bigger social network footprint, more fans on Twitter and Facebook and all that from her national prominence as a member of Congress, so it's easier for that sort of thing to get out. It's a more slickly produced ad, which may lead more people to watch it. But other than that, I mean, it doesn't prove anything one way or the other.
In other news closely related to this campaign, Representative Noem returned $4,000 in contributions from a man convicted of tax evasion. John Hunter, how closely do campaigns check who's giving them money, and can they really closely check?
Well, I think that, I mean, I don't think I know definitively how each campaign, because I think there's a wide range of that. The larger, the more sophisticated campaigns would do more, I think, and some of the newer campaigns with less experienced people might do less. But I think they would look for obvious ones, things that would trigger other things, other controversies. But as far as digging deeper, I'm not sure that they would do that. All campaigns would do that.
David Montgomery, how is something like this very embarrassing to a candidate?
No, this is a little one-day embarrassing blip in the trail. I mean, the campaign returned the money right away, basically killed the story. If they had refused to return the money, said this isn't a big deal, we're gonna spend this. That's the sort of thing that can prolong a story and stretch it out over several days, make it more embarrassing. But the Noam campaign promptly gave the money back, and I expect that will probably be the end of it.
The Associated Press reports that 9,000 South Dakotans have already voted. John Hunter, is early voting a good thing?
Well, just personally, I don't think so. And part of it is I don't think you get a chance to flesh out every issue by Labor Day or mid-September when early voting begins. And I often wondered if there have been circumstances of voter regret where a voter would cast their ballot October 1st and then something would come up during the next month that say, oh, shoot, I voted for the wrong person. So I understand the convenience of it and this, but I just think having the full campaign season is helpful. Some people would argue the campaign season is too long, but I think early voting can be ineffective.
David Montgomery, do you think the voting season is too long?
I think early voting is definitely a good thing. The question is, how long should the early voting period be? A few weeks of early voting, letting people vote at their convenience, seems like a good idea. Letting people cast their ballot 6 weeks before Election Day, maybe a little bit excessive.
Do you think there's an increased, I suppose it's more speculation than anything, but do you think there's an increased chance for voting fraud with early voting or no more than Election Day voting?
I don't think any more than usual. And to a certain extent, the effect of early voting and campaigning is pretty small. I think most of the people who vote early, and especially really early, are people who have already made up their minds, who are firm Democrats or firm Republicans, know who they're going to vote for, and aren't really going to be persuaded by the October campaigning. So I think while there is some effect as people vote and then miss the October barrage of ads, I don't think it's maybe as big as it might seem at first blush.
Former Republican South Dakota Senator Larry Pressler has endorsed President Obama for a second term. He also endorsed him in 2008. John Hunter, did Pressler have a reputation as sort of a maverick senator for doing things like this?
I don't think so. I think he was very steady. This particular endorsement is focused entirely on veterans, and Larry always made veterans issues a part of his campaign. He wrote the endorsement, he at least signed off on it, and so it was fairly strongly worded about the positive effects of President Obama's veterans policies and the negative effects of Governor Romney's. But veterans issues have always been an issue. Of course, what caught my eye immediately is and he's always talked about his Vietnam service and combat duty and so forth, which I've known for his whole career. But he mentioned that he suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome, and I wasn't aware of that before I saw this endorsement.
I think it's interesting that he endorsed President Obama against McCain. Didn't the whole veteran part of that enter into it at the time?
You know, I don't remember the endorsement as well from them, but I don't remember veterans issues being a part of that, the reason he did President Obama 4 years ago.
David Montgomery, do you think South Dakotans pay much attention to Pressler's endorsement?
I don't think so. I think he's been out of office for a long time. I don't think he's has terribly strong connections with grassroots activists and people like that. I mean, in the aftermath of when that endorsement came out, I saw people I know who aren't from South Dakota passing that around more than I saw people who are from South Dakota. From Democrats who live elsewhere in the country, it was just, hey, here's a Republican senator endorsing Obama, rather than South Dakota saying, hey, this guy we remember is supporting a Democrat. So I don't think it's going to have a big impact in South Dakota.
Well, before I let you go, tomorrow Vice President Joe Biden and Mitt Romney's running mate, Representative Paul Ryan, debate. John Hunter, how crucial is this debate to the presidential campaign, particularly in connection to what happened last week with the presidential debate?
Well, I think it'll be good viewing. I think there's a clear contrast, you know, Biden being not a likely presidential hopeful 4 years from now. Paul Ryan might be. I think Biden can be entertaining both from a gaffe standpoint and also from policy. And Ryan, I think, is an eloquent speaker, so I'd expect a good debate.
David,
it'll be interesting. It'll be entertaining. Both are very intelligent men who know a lot about the issues. It should be interesting. I don't think it'll have a terribly big effect. The vice presidential debates rarely do. I think far more important is going to be the next presidential debate when Romney and Obama face off in a town hall format.
Well, David Montgomery, thanks again for joining us on the Dakota Political Junkies.
Glad to be here.
And John Hunter, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Carl and David.
John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader, and David Montgomery is a political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, where he also writes the Political Smokeout blog.